Welcome to Thinking Out Loud, the podcast that puts you inside conversations with the most deeply passionate, intensely dedicated, and yes, the most thoughtful people in our industry. So sit back and stay tuned. They may just change the way you think.
Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization focused on the media entertainment technology industry. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. You know, I think that we should start out with a level set. You know, Roku is best known for making devices, but you've been pushing into some really different spaces recently. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Roku and the business that you're in these days and the areas of focus?
Sure. I think that's a great question, Vicki. I appreciate it because often I think we struggle with awareness really at the maybe at the CEO of a traditional media company level versus awareness at the consumer level because we're very, very well known from consumers. And I think there's an opportunity maybe to educate a few folks in the media business about exactly who we are and what we do. So just a quick overview of Roku. We were actually founded a number of years ago by Anthony Wood, our CEO and founder, who has consistently been ahead of the curve as to where the media business, in particular the television business, is going. And when he founded Roku back in the early aughts, just after the turn of the millennium, his vision was that all TV will be streamed. And now we're just kind of catching up to Anthony's vision and seeing that now that is actually going to be the case. But Roku is the largest streaming platform in the United States. We have 51 million active accounts, which you can think about as basically the equivalent of a household. And those active accounts in 2020 streamed 58 billion hours, which is just over 3.8 hours a day. So a tremendous amount of usage on the streaming platform, and we're seeing a tremendous amount of growth going forward. And our business, as you mentioned, has evolved over the years, but if you look at it very simply, it's really there's two functions. The first is generating active accounts, and we do that by selling players and sticks, and also licensing our operating system now to dozens of TV OEM manufacturers in the U.S. and internationally. So that's how we acquire those 51 million plus active accounts. And then we have another business after we acquire those active accounts, we call that the platform business. And that's essentially creating value from our audience or from those active accounts. And the platform business here at Roku has three main functions. The first is our ad sales function. The second is our first-party programming and first-party services, like the Roku channel function. And then the third is the business that I manage that you referenced, which is our content business. And that is managing the business relationships with the 14,000 channel partners that we have on Roku. And so that's how I fit into the overall picture and the overall company.
Great overview. It makes it certainly clear to understand, but it's not a simple business. It's actually got a lot of interesting tentacles. And I would imagine that there are increasing complexities given how some of these parts of the business dovetail comfortably and some don't. So in the evolution of this business, talk to us a little bit about the comfort, discomfort level of growing in different directions.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think we've seen certainly a lot of change in our business in the last few years as streaming now has become mainstream. And as we're realizing that vision of Anthony's that all television will be streamed. And I've been at Roku for 4 years. And in that time frame, I've seen significant change in the way we interact with many of our partners. So when I first got to Roku, I think this was again around 4 years ago, streaming was becoming interesting to partners and interesting to traditional media. But I think at that time, it certainly wasn't something that they were leaning into. In fact, I characterize it as sort of leaning back, maybe experimenting with streaming, but not really going all in and certainly not wanting to disrupt at all their traditional pay television business, which was their primary focus and their bread and butter at the time. And I think since I've been at Roku the last 4 years, it's really working with media companies to now go all into streaming, which we believe is essential now for the success and for the survival of media companies is making this transition from traditional paid television to streaming. And I think that's really been the biggest change now. And I think the most exciting thing, given my background, is how to work with these companies to really get them all in and invested in streaming to be successful. And so that's kind of how the role has evolved over the last few years for me.
So my brain is going in two different directions. I want to talk about the business, but I'm also curious to just ask you about your move. Prior to Roku, you were leading digital distribution at 20th Century Fox for film and TV content. And what made you jump over to Roku at that lean back stage before streaming was a verb?
So yeah, I made the move back in mid-2017 before the Fox merger, and before that really, you know, kind of changed the landscape and for a lot of the big moves we've seen in the last few years of media. But I had a really, really positive experience at Fox and loved the training, met a lot of fantastic people, and really enjoyed working in the digital business. And I think for me, I had seen and been able to have the privilege of working with Apple and Amazon and Google early in their life cycles of getting into the media business, and had a lot of fun working with those companies as they entered digital media and became successful. And I vowed to myself at the time that I wasn't going to miss the next great big digital media company that would emerge in this space. It was really just the opportunity I thought of working with a team and a product that brought together my experience working in digital media, my experience working in entertainment. And before that, I worked in technology mergers and acquisitions, and my experience working in technology. And I thought that the timing was right, and Roku was right at the opportunity to be poised to grow along with this massive streaming market. So that's really what led me to leave a very positive experience at Fox and to take a bet on Roku at the time. Now, that bet looks like it was a pretty sure thing, but even in 2017, I think there were a lot of people that were questioning my move or questioning if streaming was actually going to materialize in a way that I don't think that we have those questions anymore.
Earlier, you said that Roku is very well known among consumers. And you also have a lot of touch points with consumers, and you see the landscape from a very unique perspective. Tell us from that perspective, what do consumers really want? What matters most to consumers, and where are they gravitating?
It's interesting that you ask that question, because I think it's something that we ask ourselves all the time, is how can we satisfy the consumer? How can we not only meet the needs that they have today, but look ahead to where we think the consumer is going and position ourselves to give the consumer exactly what he or she wants going forward? And that's really been sort of the history of the company. If you look at Roku, what we've done on the hardware side of the business, we've always been the leader in price and have constantly looked to make our hardware better and cheaper for consumers. And right now we are the best value by far in the market. Our entry-level streaming device, which is a fantastic device, costs $29. And you can contrast that with streaming devices that can cost up to $200 for effectively the same experience. So we've always been very focused on making streaming a very valuable and mass market product. The same thing for our television partners, have the best television experiences at the lowest price. So that's always been important to us there. I think the second way we really try to get ahead of the consumer is offering the consumer the services that they want. And I think a good example of that is the launch of the Roku channel a few years ago now. And the history of that was probably 4 or 5 years ago, we noticed that consumers were searching for free. That was our number one search term, free television, free movies. And we decided, knowing that data, that we were going to satisfy that key need that consumers had, or that key desire that consumers had, and start the Roku channel. And so with that idea, the Roku channel today has over 40,000 pieces of film and TV content on an on-demand basis that consumers can enjoy. We have over 175 channels of linear content, everything from news to entertainment to sports, that consumers are enjoying. And that's been a phenomenal success. It nearly more than doubled in 2020, now reaches 63 million people. And all of that started from the premise of, what does the consumer want? How do we give it to the consumer at the lowest and best price? And last time I checked, you can't get any better than free. And that's been a very good example of how we've tried to get ahead of consumer trends and give people what they want.
You are experimenting quite a bit in this space to test what's resonating most with consumers and what will draw consumers' attention. And earlier this year, you made an announcement about buying dozens of shows that had actually been produced for Quibi, which I would imagine is part of this test of what works, what attracts and gains traction with consumers, it's taken you into a little bit of a different content space. Could you tell us a little bit about the thinking behind that and whether or not there are any early days of seeing any of it work?
So yeah, we've made a couple of moves recently into content by, like, to your point, acquiring the assets of Quibi. We've also recently announced that we acquired the rights to This Old House, which is the number one home improvement series on television. It's been on television for 40 plus years. We acquired the team to Funny or Die for branded entertainment. And so we're really excited that we can bring these assets to the Roku channel. And again, our focus in the Roku channel is how do we offer consumers the best free advertising supported content available. And that's important because that's our laser focus. We're not looking to compete against Netflix head-to-head for subscription-based content, really focusing on that free category. And we thought all of those opportunities were really unique, kind of one-time opportunities to further our competitive advantage in free, further our competitive advantage in advertising-supported content, and offer the consumer that much more of a better experience. So we're really excited about that. The Quibi content is coming to be available very soon. And so we're looking forward to see how that performs. I feel like there's a ton of opportunity with the quality of that content and the fact that not a lot of people have been able to see it yet. And we're very optimistic about the other, you know, forms of original content that we have coming as well.
Very different types of content that you're now acquiring. You know, This Old House is a completely different viewer base than the Quibi content has been produced for. Are you intentionally trying to expand your audience segments? And if so, is there something you can share with us about that strategy?
Well, what I can share is that there's all kinds of content that works on AVOD. And we're seeing a very, very large and diverse user base now of the Roku channel. Young, older, all kinds of demos, because again, of our product, we're such a mass market product, by the way, by our price points and the appeal that Roku has to consumers, that we're seeing a very large audience. And so now we're working with different kinds of content that fill and satisfy those different types of audience. And that's the exciting thing that we have, is the opportunity to expose more and more users above and beyond the 63 million users that I quoted that are exposed to the Roku channel now, to continue to grow and grow that audience. And we think there's a direct benefit to the consumer by doing that. And there's a direct benefit, obviously, to Roku by making the Roku channel continue to grow.
So Roku is betting on the fact that consumers will continue to embrace advertising to be able to consume free content, which is a bit opposite where a lot of the streaming universe is going, which is, you know, ad-free, but paid subscription. There's a lot of research that validates both sides. Can you share with us the experience you're seeing with the Roku consumer base and their willingness to absorb advertising and how that's working?
There's so much great content out there on these subscription services. And, you know, their growth and their success has contributed to our growth and our success. Netflix and Amazon and Apple TV Plus and all, like you said, Disney Plus, all of these great ad-free subscription services. So that's, you know, that's a good thing for Roku, and that's a good thing for the consumer. Our viewpoint is that there is obviously strong demand for those services, and, you know, they're filling a very, very strong need, which is satisfying the desire of consumers as they move over from traditional television. In fact, much of this great content you can't get on traditional television, you can only get it on streaming. That said, our belief is that there is a market that is very, very large and will continue to grow for free content. And the reason why we believe that is that at some point, there's going to be a limit to how much people are willing and able to spend on subscription services in streaming. And there's a lot of streaming services out there. And as people move over from cable, where they might be spending $100 a month, they're expecting to save, and they are saving significant amounts of money. So they can't subscribe to everything. And we believe because of that, that free services like the Roku channel will be a strong part of augmenting a consumer's content viewership in the streaming world. And so therefore, we have, you know, a great audience, a tremendous amount of users that use AVOD to supplement engagement between SVOD services, and we're seeing a significant amount of growth. And so that's what we're very excited about. So I don't think it's a mutually exclusive SVOD versus AVOD. Again, we see the pie growing for all of these services, and each of these business models has their appropriate place for the consumer.
Roku has an even more interesting advertising model because you're not just selling ads through your partnerships. You generate some ad revenue based on the ads that your partners are selling. So you don't control all of the ad content within the programming that you're putting in front of your consumers. Explain to us a little bit about the business logistics and the user experience of that model.
There's so much excitement that we have for advertising in streaming going forward because our competitive advantage, and two, I believe that no other streaming platform has the kind of capabilities that we have in the advertising business. And to your point, you know, there is a strong demand for advertising supported content by the consumer, but we're making that, you know, advertising model much better. So it's not your traditional TV advertising model at all. For example, in the Roku channel, we have half of the ad load that is on linear TV. And that's by design. We want to make that a better experience for consumers. And then for advertisers, and one of the big advantages that we have is we have a tremendous amount of data that goes into our advertising models. So for advertisers, we're making their advertising much more effective. An example of this might be like a diaper company in the consumer packaged goods world that in traditional TV had to advertise to try and find their target consumer. Maybe they might advertise men and women age 18 to 34. Well, in the streaming world, they can target new moms and new dads, which is obviously much more valuable than just such a broad-based traditional linear television demographic. And that targeting makes their advertising much more valuable, and they're willing and able to pay more for that targeted advertising. And that's why we're so excited about these models as they transition to OTT or to streaming. That gives us just much better ways to work with our partners to do that. And so our advertising business, as you asked, is comprised of a few different inputs into our advertising business. We have advertising inventory that we generate on our own through the Roku channel, as well as we take a portion of the ads from many channels that are on Roku that we sell ourselves. You could be watching content in a third-party non-Roku app, and when it goes to commercial, we're actually selling that advertising spot instead of the channel. And that just adds to the reach and to the overall scale of our advertising business. And as a platform, that's one of our competitive advantages, is that we can acquire inventory across a number of channels, aggregate that, and give that to our ad sales team in order for them to generate revenue. So that's why we're very excited about this model. It's our own advertising business. We work with our channel partners to acquire portions of their advertising inventory and create value that way.
Is there any sort of curation that happens to ensure that competitors don't end up back-to-back or redundant ads don't end up back-to-back to improve the viewer experience?
Absolutely. It's something that we're working constantly with our partners to make sure that they have the appropriate amount of ad loads, and we have requirements around that where they can't have excessive amounts of ads. And then within each individual ad pod or cluster of ads, making sure that, yes, you're not getting repetitive ads and you're getting ads that are on demo and on target, because that just makes for a better experience for the user, makes for a better experience for the advertiser. And that's one of our key differentiations. And we can do that, again, because we're very uniquely situated in the advertising ecosystem. We own the platform. We have the data. We work with our third-party channel partners. And versus any third party that might be in advertising, we have much more capabilities to ensure that those problems don't happen than most of other third parties in the connected TV advertising business.
There's been some recent press around the heartburn with the ad model and some of the pushback and trying to get deals done, but there always seems to be a path forward. Can you shed some light for us on what those concerns sound like and what types of workarounds you've created to be able to move forward together and grow the business together with your partners?
Yeah, certainly there's been elements in the press about new distribution partners coming onto Roku and getting agreements done with those partners. I think the way I look at it, it kind of goes back to Anthony's viewpoint that all TV will be streamed when he launched Roku many, many years ago. And I think historically, streaming wasn't relevant to a lot of companies in traditional media, and so they didn't pay much attention to it. Then as it's gotten more relevant, we've really worked with partners to try and find ways and reach agreements that work for them but also work for us as well. And with some, it's been, you know, an educational process. It's taken longer maybe with some than others to get there. But the traditional pay television, you know, ecosystem today is unfortunately, it's a zero-sum game. And whenever when these distribution agreements come up and pay TV, what one party gets is directly at the expense of the other party on the other side of the table. And sometimes that's maybe been the viewpoint of some partners that have started in their discussions with Roku, that it's just a zero-sum game, and I'm going to try and minimize the value of that Roku would receive and maximize the value that, that we would receive. And what we try to do is pivot that to focus both parties on how do we increase value? Because unlike the traditional pay television ecosystem, there's growth. There's tons of growth and value to be created for everyone here. We're more than, you know, growing by more than 60% or so from a streaming hour basis on a year-over-year standpoint. So we've worked with these partners to say, okay, how do we make your business more valuable? How do we help you make that transition from television to streaming and have you create a significant amount of value on Roku? And we believe we can do that. And we believe we're offering a tremendous amount of value. So when we work with partners and structure these distribution agreements, sometimes we are asking for a bigger share of the pie. But ultimately, we try and structure an agreement that our partner's share of the pie is going to grow significantly as well. And I think that's been the main transition in the last 12 to 24 months, is going from this kind of zero-sum win-loss mentality of pay television to a win-win, mutually beneficial world of OTT. And, you know, we've gotten there. We've gotten there with all the parties that you would think of in launching them on Roku. And once they've launched, they've been terrifically successful. And we're very proud of that. Disney Plus, 100 million subscribers have been phenomenally successful. We launched HBO Max and Peacock and Discovery Plus and Paramount Plus all within the last 6 months. And all those services now, we're leaning in, we're working together, and we're seeing really, really strong results. And so that's what we're very proud of, is structuring agreements that can give this kind of win-win, and then working with partners to see the significant value and the results that we create.
If I understand correctly, you are very collaborative with your platform partners in all areas of the business. So could you enlighten us a little bit about user acquisition, customer retention, brand marketing, advertising, any or all of those? And what does that look like when you say you collaborate with your partners? How in it together are you really?
Absolutely. So that's our main goal. And my team, the content business, the only way we make money is when our partners are successful. We're not selling physical goods like maybe some of our competitors. We're not selling devices like some of our competitors. The only way we win is when our content partners create value on Roku, because that's how we get paid, is we take a share of the subscription revenue that's generated on Roku. We might take a share of the transactional VOD revenue that's generated on Roku, or a share, like we discussed, of the advertising value that our partners are creating on Roku. So we want our partners to win, and we want them to gain as much value as possible, because that's how we win as well. And so we have industry-leading on-platform tools to help our partners achieve whatever success metric that they want. If it's generating new subscribers, or if it's lowering churn, which is very, very important for subscription services, or if it's for generating more engagement, which is very important for advertising services, we have performance-based tools that allow them to do that. So for example, subscription services might say they have a lifetime value for every user they acquire that's $150. And so they may come to us and say, I would like to acquire new users for my subscription service, and we're willing to pay $25 to do that. Because we pay $25, we achieve a lifetime value of $150. They would do that all day long. And we have machine learning, performance-based tools that help them invest to get that exact return on investment that they want. And it's been really, really successful. For example, Frndly TV, it's a virtual MVPD. I would say it's you know, relatively new and small, but they're not that small anymore. In fact, they'd be amazed how large they are relative to some of the more established or larger MVPD brands out there. But they've learned by investing in these performance-based tools of Roku that they get a 65% better return on investment than any other marketing spend that they're doing out in the market. And in fact, they achieved their 12-month goal in less than 7 months with investment on Roku, because we were able to bring the kinds of consumers and acquisition that they needed to achieve their goals. And so that we're really excited about. And then on advertising, which is really important to us as well, again, I mentioned we have an unparalleled, best-in-class ad tech platform. It's the OneView advertising platform. And we can help advertisers find exactly the consumer that they want that gives them the best return on investment for their advertising spend. And an example of that is Snyder's of Hanover, the pretzel company, which is very close to my heart because I was put on a timeout as a kid for eating too many Snyder's of Hanover originally, but they're still a top selection at the household today. But we worked with them and in partnership with our Kroger partnership, that they realized that their investment in advertising on Roku brought users to the store that consumed Snyder's products five times more that for consumers that had watched an ad on Roku than consumers that did not. And they realized that their investment on Roku, they got over 250% return on investment by advertising and finding those unique audiences. So just a small snapshot into how we can really work with brands or with services to achieve exactly the kind of outcomes they want to achieve.
Do you find any reticence to diving into these collaborative endeavors?
I think it's in some ways it might be in a couple ways. It might be, again, what different from maybe the value exchange that they've used that they've had traditionally. So in our distribution agreements, we might structure deals differently than they have previously to reach that sort of mutually beneficial outcome. And so for some partners, maybe that's taken longer for them to understand because it's not traditional for what they're doing. And then on the marketing investment side, similar that performance-based marketing on video platforms may have not been something that our partners have done either substantially in the past or at all. And so we have to educate them on how they can get better outcomes with this model than maybe traditional video advertising. So I don't think it's been a challenge to get companies and brands to work with us. It's just maybe a bit of an educational process because it's different. And hopefully the differences and the benefits that we bring are substantial and they're very rewarding for the partners, which is what we've seen.
I also think the pandemic effects have amplified opportunities, accelerated behavior changes, business changes. What impact have you seen as a result of the pandemic at Roku?
I think a lot. So I think personally, managing the content business, we had a phenomenal year. And I think that was great to see that so many consumers embraced streaming. They embraced subscribing to new services, watching movies at home. That from the content business perspective, we had a fantastic year. And we saw these trends that were already in place pre-pandemic. In fact, our CEO pronounced that 2020 was going to start off the streaming decade, and that was in February of 2020 before the pandemic. And the changes that we saw in the pandemic were really just accelerating the trends that we had already been seeing anyway. And we look at those trends as not slowing down today. But one of the things I'm also most excited about, and really from a personal level, given my experience at 20th Century Fox that you mentioned earlier, was the emergence of this premium home theatrical window. And for me, that was the first project that I worked on in 2007 when I joined Fox. It was the last project that I worked on in 2017 when I left Fox, and we could never get it to materialize. There was just too much resistance in two places. One, there's too much resistance internally at the studio when we were conflicted that the emergence of this at-home theatrical window on video on demand would disrupt the traditional theatrical business. And if you don't get fully behind something as an organization, it's destined for failure. So that was an internal problem at the studios at the time. And then the external problem, of course, was that the exhibitors did not want to move one inch in allowing any sort of changes or additions of an at-home theatrical window because it was an existential threat they viewed to their business. But of course, the pandemic with movie theaters closed and studios now having to react to that change, that really presented the opportunity for that in-home theatrical window. And in my belief that one, there is substantial consumer demand for this. People want it. They want to watch movies when and how they want to watch movies. Technology clearly exists. Again, we have 51 million users. All those users, a vast majority, have credit cards and purchasing power. They're ready to watch movies at home. And there's business models that support it, these premium VOD business models or even direct to SVOD services. So the combination of all those things, my belief is it's coming. You can't hold back the market when you have all of those different attributes in place. So that's what I'm excited about. And I'm also not convinced that this premium home window is going to cannibalize theatrical at all. You'll have people that want to watch movies in theaters, you'll have people that want to watch movies at home, you'll have people that want to do both. And my viewpoint is that there's opportunity. And just looking, I guess, at my personal background for this, we have a young child at home. We haven't been able to go to the theater for a few years. We probably won't go for the next few years. And we'd love to watch movies earlier at home. And not being able to do that has just forced us to watch more Netflix. Or the other example I like to use is my parents in Indiana. They love independent cinema, but a lot of the movies never even come to their area. They just debut in New York or LA. And so bringing movies directly to them would be incremental. So whether it's incremental or it's cannibalizing the theatrical window, my belief is it's happening. Consumers want it. And if the studios just don't get behind it, then they're going to be left further and further behind as Netflix is releasing 70 movies that are wonderful, high production value, direct to streaming, day and date. So I guess get on board or get left behind with the consumer change on that one. But very excited that things like that are changing as a result of the pandemic.
Yeah, so much is happening in that space. It is fascinating. I guess Warner Brothers just came out and announced what their 2022 plan looks like. They've done some theater deals with 45-day windows instead of 90-day windows. And Disney, of course, has been spearheading the subscriber plus model where you can get same-day access to their movie releases if you pay an extra fee, even if you are a subscriber. Would Roku consider doing something like that for premium content releases? Are you exploring different models of trying to leverage the shifts that are taking place in this part of the ecosystem?
So for us, we're really helping our partners kind of explore this. And to your point, it's a good point on, you know, there's a few models now that our partners are working with, whether it's day and date as part of Disney Plus, or if there's a 45-day window before it goes into VOD, or if it's day and date window and it's a higher priced product. There's a few business models that we're really working with our partners to give them sort of the data and help them find the audience to be successful. So we look at it, I guess, in two ways. Like, again, one, the consumer wants it. So we want to give the consumer what he or she wants. And so that's a huge opportunity. And second, it's good for us. Theatrical window was one of the few areas in the entire media business that we didn't participate in. We didn't have a seat at the table, and now we do. And so we have a vested interest in obviously making this successful and working with partners to find the right audiences, to make it incremental for them, to find the right price points. So I think versus doing it ourselves, I don't think we're going to be in the theatrical movie production business potentially anytime soon, but really working with our partners to find that right model that makes them successful.
I just read an article about how Universal is considering withholding their content from other platforms to put it on Peacock. And so we're starting to see a little bit more of this, right? The media company view of keeping the content in the family and pushing it through their streaming portal. How does that play out in the Roku world and affect your business when your partners start to become a bit more siloed in the way they view their distribution strategies?
It's a great question. You know, there's some really smart folks that I know at Universal, so I'm confident that they're going to make a really good, educated decision there. In some ways, it's challenging, I'm sure, because like we talked about, people are weighing and services are weighing, do I license content externally and, you know, have a guaranteed revenue stream and continue some of the businesses that I've been operating historically, or do I pull it all back in order to make my service stand out and give my service the best chance of success? You know, the way we view it is we're encouraging, you know, all these companies to be as aggressive as possible in streaming. In fact, the way I view the world, and maybe it's either simplistic or I have a sort of a vested interest in seeing streaming succeed, I view the only way to be truly successful is to be all in now on streaming. And, you know, Netflix has done that. They were day one all in when they started years and years ago. They have 200 million subscribers. They're now making 70 new movies all day and date for streaming. They did what people thought was impossible, which is build a global television network and now produce more content than any of the major Hollywood studios. Disney, I think, is another good example that went all in, took all of its crown jewels, put them on Disney Plus for a very low and compelling price point, and now we've seen 100 plus million subscribers. Just phenomenal success in less than a year and a half. And HBO Max, you referenced, they were all in 2021. Theatrical releases, we'll see where they are in 2022. But that kind of commitment, we're really working with our partners to ensure that they're successful, because I think that's what it takes to be successful in streaming. And those decisions, by going all in streaming, not only, we believe, benefit the partner, they're certainly going to benefit the consumer. You can certainly make the argument that the consumer is much better off in streaming with lower prices and better content. Then ultimately, that's good for us. So, you know, Peacock becoming stronger and HBO Max becoming stronger, all of that consumption is going to happen on Roku because we're the market leader in streaming. So ultimately, all that is good for us as well.
So we also read a lot about how all of that then leads to the more traditional television package coming down to news and sports. But there's been a lot of interesting shifts in viewing behavior even around sports. And I know that Roku saw some activity around news and Super Bowl recently. Maybe you could share some of that with us and shed some light on that part of the business in transition.
I think sports and news, these typical, you know, we call sort of live events that maybe historically have been, you know, very strong on broadcast or linear TV, we're seeing the same, you know, trends of moving to streaming that we're seeing in every other category as well. And just a couple examples of that. Super Bowl this year on Roku, according to Conviva, we have the largest share of Super Bowl consumption. By the way, it's over 41% market share for overall Super Bowl viewership. We saw all channels that stream the Super Bowl were up almost 50% on a year-over-year basis versus last year. March Madness, we saw since 2019 that consumption of March Madness increased on a streaming basis 85%. And through the data that we're able to collect, 6 out of 10 people that were watching March Madness in 2019 on traditional TV were now streaming it in 2021. So just speaks to the fact that consumption of all forms of content, particularly live content, sports, news, shifting over to streaming. And then, you know, we had a huge election cycle, obviously, at the beginning of this year. 20 million people streamed the election on Roku News throughout the election cycle, and we broke records day of election in the Roku channel for viewership and audience. So all of these different areas of the business that once we thought were, you know, really the last kind of remaining areas of pay television, news, sports, live events, we're seeing, again, that same transition from traditional television to streaming, which is a big opportunity for us going forward.
Well, perhaps it really is true that all television will be streamed. It certainly seems like all indicators from this conversation point in that direction, and that bodes well for Roku and the future of your business.
I hope that's the case. I hope one day we can all catch up to Anthony's vision right there. 2020 was a great year for Roku, and we're very excited about 2021 and going forward.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today and shedding some light on all these different corners of the business. It's a fascinating time, and it's always interesting to talk to a guest who is sitting right in the center of so much of it and has such an interesting perspective.
Great. Well, thank you, Vicki. I really appreciate your time.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.